Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist in its alternative setting. We'll be returning to another building before long and eventually back next door. My name is Rick Recking. I'm a member of the program committee now and a longtime member of the society. I welcome you. We welcome people of every ethnic group, of every religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you regardless of your abilities or inabilities. We come together this morning as celebrants, as seekers and companions. We enter into this, the longest day, joyfully, allowing ourselves the beauty of this time together, in which we may rest our cares and sorrows, and allow our hearts and spirits to be uplifted. I invite you to take a deep breath, drink in the beauty and community that surrounds you in this place, and as you release it, become centered here in the now. Our chalice lighting today is by Ellen Hamilton. I think I'll get it lit before I read it. In faith, together, we light this small scrap of light, symbol of Grandfather Sun's enormous power, whose energy burns so brightly. In these days of deep summer, catapulting the leaves and vines, vegetables, flowers, and fruits to astonishing size, lengths, and heights, spilling over the tops of cages, walls, and trellises, delighting and nourishing all beings. We bask in the warmth and the heat of these days with lightened hearts and quickened senses, in gratitude and in faith. Lucky us. Today we've got a returning member going to speak to us about work that she's been doing on the border to prevent deaths of people that would like to migrate to our country. Mary Summers is a nurse. She's been a member of Prairie since 2001, she tells me. She's also a member in the Unitarian Church in Tucson, Arizona. Mary's spoken to us before about some of these issues, but they're ever more relevant. Today, this morning, you turn on the news and hear dreadful stories of what our government's doing in regards to this. And some brave people at the border, of whom Mary's a member, represent us in the struggle to welcome people to this country. I'd like you all to join me in welcoming Mary Summers.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity of sharing what is going on at the border. As Rick has said, I've been a member of the UU Church of Tucson for 10 years. We started becoming snowbirds about 2009, and a former member here, Nancy Graham, had always talked about this church, and I was aware that they had a special ministry called No More Deaths. And we arrived in Tucson on Friday after Thanksgiving that year, and I think Sunday we went to visit the church. It was one of my priorities, and they had a very welcoming announcement that No More Deaths was going to be meeting the next day, Monday night, at the church, and we decided to attend. I remember that meeting well because there was a young man who was studying to be a UU minister, and he had just been convicted for littering, a misdemeanor, I believe it was, for littering by leaving water in the desert. And he had to do community service, and we were discussing whether or not he should go to prison or do this community service, because he didn't feel he had done anything wrong. And in 2009, we still had federal prosecutors that were named by George Bush, and soon after that, Obama named a federal prosecutor for the Tucson area that told the Border Patrol and everyone else, don't bring these cases to me anymore. So I learned very quickly that it's very important who's appointing these federal prosecutors, and I was very happy that my friends who were being arrested, that would give us a break, and we had one for 8 years until now. Of course, the rest are coming again for humanitarian volunteers. So actually, how did we get to this point that people were trying to put water in the desert to stop people from dying? No More Deaths has several functions that they do. The main one, they started in 2004 after a very hot summer, and over 100 people had died right outside Tucson. And they, for a bunch of actually ministers and people who had been active in the sanctuary movement, got together and decided that their main focus was going to be, let's try to stop some of these deaths. So they started putting jugs of water in the desert. And how is it that we have people dying in the desert? Well, it started and with the administration of Bill Clinton. I connect a lot of what happened today with the passage of NAFTA in 1993, December 1993. And NAFTA, what NAFTA did was change the amount of money that migrants were getting. Migrants used to come into the United States, they would work for a while, they'd make money so they could buy a little house maybe in Mexico, but their wives and children were living in Mexico. And what NAFTA did was not only want migrants to stay in Mexico, but they wanted a wall to keep them there. So Nogales was one of the crossing points that people were doing, which is the place where I volunteer. It's 75 miles south of Tucson. And they built a wall right through the city. 4 months after NAFTA was passed, the wall started to go up. And what happened is the Mexicans didn't want to stay in Mexico and make a tenth of what they were making in the United States. And many of them had other kinds of jobs also, gardeners, driving buses for Disneyland, all sorts of jobs. And what happened is now they could no longer freely go back to their families. So they were telling their families, you come here to the United States, I can't go home anymore. And so what the government wasn't counting on, because they had this policy of deterrence, they Doris Messner told Congress, they will try to cross through this rough desert, they will die and they will stop. Well, that isn't what happened. We now had mothers and children crossing through the desert and dying. I think one of the book clubs here, your book club read the book, Joselina, and she was a little girl that was 14. Both her parents were in the United States. They paid a coyote, and a coyote is someone who, when I use the word coyote, I'm not referring to the animal, I'm referring to someone who's bringing people across the border. And so what happened is she drank some bad water, and the coyote, she got sick, the coyote didn't want to wait for her, so he took her younger brother, who was then going to come back and get her. And instead, the young brother couldn't remember where she was. A lot of people were looking for her. When we got to Tucson, they were still wearing these buttons with her name and picture on her. And Dan Millis was out one day leaving water for No More Deaths. He was a volunteer. And what happened is he found her body. And then a couple days later, he got arrested by the Border Patrol, almost like a payback. And because he had found someone who was sick, and he put him in his car and took him to the hospital, and they arrested him for aiding and abetting. And the settlement was that he could no longer work for No More Deaths, but he works for the Sierra Club down there, and he's leading the fight against the wall. because the wall will do great damage to the state of Arizona where it is left open. So Bill Clinton got us NAFTA, 325 miles of wall, and he criminalized crossing the border. When they're talking about all these people who are criminals, well, you cross the border, and then you come back and you try to go back again, and you are committing a felony. So that was also a big change. So then here comes Obama, and he wants, I guess, giving him the benefit of the doubt, he wanted immigration change, and he wanted to show the Republicans that he was going to secure the border, so he started deporting people. I don't think he really understood what he was doing. He deported, in his term, 2.5 million people. So that's how my work got affected. George Bush was deporting, but not in those numbers. Obama started in his first term deporting 400,000 people a year. And so No More Deaths had just started going into Mexico and helping people who were deported, because that's what we do is we take people to the border, our government does, we say, here you are, and they stand there and they have no idea what they should do next. Or some of them don't know where they are. If they've lived here for 20, 30 years, they may don't even speak very good Spanish. So my work has changed depending upon the political climate and what is going on. When I first went over, it was before all these heavy deportations were happening, and we really didn't have a place to give medical care. We would just go to the bus station. There were people being deported, or we'd give it in the street, or we go to the consular office. We weren't working, No More Deaths. When I say we, I mean No More Deaths. Was not working with the Kino Border Initiative at that time. We would maybe go help them give clothes. But I went over there usually with a guy named Jim, and he had first aid training, and we would give medical care on Thursdays. Some other people came some other days of the week. It wasn't very organized. But about, as the deportations really got out of hand, we collaborated with Kino Border Initiative, and after their meal, they announced there's people here to get medical care. We would do it at the Commodore. So we would drive down to the border, walk across, and there is the Commodore. It's about a mile. And they're building a new shelter across the street. The nurse is going to have a room to work in. We'll have better supplies. It's supposed to be much better, but for the last 10 years, I've had various venues for the kind of work that we do. Some people, we go as a team now, four people. Two people give medical care, two people make phone calls. Often the people, families don't understand they've been deported. They have very little, they take so much away from them. If they had a phone, maybe the battery's dead. So we provide phone calls for them to call their family or employer. And then we also give medical care. So now, moving forward and working with the current president, things have changed. Of course, people are being arrested for giving humanitarian aid. Speak about Scott Warren at the Humanist Union sometime in the future. And he's, if you've looked at the Unitarian Universalist Service Center
Committee.
They have him on the front page right now that he was arrested for aiding and abetting, and it was a hung jury. 8 people found him not guilty, and 4 people found him guilty. So they're targeting, again, with these new federal prosecutors, humanitarian volunteers. I don't have any problem in Mexico because I'm not working in the United States. They're not going to do anything to me. But a lot of people are being arrested. One young gal, I went to her, I went to the trial when eight people were arrested, and she came to be a student to learn what was going on. No More Desk takes in students from colleges all over the United States to educate them. And it was her first time out in the desert, and she was arrested, now facing maybe going to federal prison. And she's just this young college kid. So those cases, I believe, were dropped. No, they were settled. They were settled. They had to pay a fine, and I don't know what they had to promise. Almost they usually have to promise they'll not go back out in the desert. So then comes our president today and the asylum. As I say, every year it changes. And not this year, but the year before, I came back the end of April, and that's when the asylum just actually started to pick up. And it was in May, and I wasn't there, when they started separating the children from the parents. They put the parents into detention. They put the children in a different detention, or they just deport the parents right away. And we still haven't been able to try to get both children and parents back together. So that had stopped by the time I came back. But what hadn't stopped was this huge flux of people at the border wanting asylum. Now, Andrew, my husband, is an attorney. And for years he would help No More Desk with legal work. And some of the work he did was helping people get asylum. And we went to a class to learn about asylum. And what I remember there was, which I hadn't understood before, there's seven classifications. And if you don't fit in one of those classifications, you can't even ask for asylum. Mexican women is one classification because it's been proven that they have so much domestic violence against them. But Mexican men are not able to just go up to the border and ask for asylum. But there's so much violence in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, that that's also a group that can go and ask for asylum. No one's going to question, at this point, I don't think, the amount of violence in Honduras and El Salvador. The stories I've heard are horrible. One that comes to mind this year is, I wasn't working that day, but that week, I don't go every week, is a man from Honduras. I just went over the mountain into El Salvador, got mixed up with the gangs, and somehow, I don't know what the story was, but they cut both his arms off at the elbows and poked one of his eyes out. He came with sunglasses, and he went to make a phone call, and he took the glasses, I don't know, someone must have had to take them off for him, and here was his eye kind of hanging out. So the violence is real. There's no question that these people are facing violence, and they're also facing their children being taken away from them. When they get to be about the age 8, they use the girls for sex, and they use the boys to help them with their gang activities.
In which country?
El Salvador. I know more about El Salvador and a little bit about Honduras. Honduras, of course, they had a socialist government, and the president was going to let the people live on the land. This was in 2008, I think, and farm it. And when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, I don't think Obama knew about it because he came out right away and said there's a coup. And then all of a sudden he had to backtrack. Hillary Clinton gave her okay that they could go in and get a different president, one that would not have the people living on the land, but kick them off and start planting palm trees for palm oil. And that country is now just a failed country, just like El Salvador pretty much is. El Salvador has just elected a new president, that people have a lot of hope in. Both sides seem to be corrupt and couldn't end the violence. He's a conservative, somewhat conservative, but they have a lot of hope. He doesn't belong to either of the major parties there. So what happened is Donald Trump started hollering about the asylum laws. It was like giving an advertisement on TV, come to the U.S. if you have a problem. He started letting everybody know. It's so easy to get asylum. It's terrible. We got to change the laws. People just have to come to the border and do this, this, and they can come in, which is true. The way asylum works, if you're in one of these categories, you go to the border, you have to give an address. And most of them do have a relative or somebody they know in the U.S. You give an address, and then before Trump, you were taken to a place in Tucson run by Catholic Charities called Casa Litas, and they processed you in a few days. They let you rest, gave you food, you got clothing, and they got you to a bus station, helped you get on the bus, because Border Patrol just, they don't want anything to do with helping someone when they come over for asylum. And you get 16 days to then go register with Immigration Services wherever you are, and then the court process starts, and it can take 6 years because you go and ask for delays, or you do lots of things that lawyers do so this case isn't settled if you don't think they're going to go your way. But many of them do get asylum, but not anywhere near the amount of people who ask for it. And if you don't have an attorney, which is why so many people like my husband volunteer for this, if you don't have an attorney, you have practically no chance. And so Donald Trump is out there letting everybody know how easy this is. Well, it didn't take long for the coyotes or anybody else to go into Honduras and El Salvador and fill up buses and buses and buses. So in March, I think we had 110,000 people at the border. At the Comodoro, we used to see 60 to 80 people. We gave them breakfast. People needed medical care. It was manageable. All of a sudden, there's 400 people at the Comodoro for breakfast. So we're doing three shifts, and they're not adults. Now we're having children. And so what changed for me is I never did nursing in pediatrics. I knew nothing about taking care of children. So we're on the phone. We have a doctor associated with Nomer Desk, and whenever we have a question, like what dosage do you give what to for someone who's got diarrhea and they're 2 years old? So her name is Norma Price. She was one of the witnesses in Scott Warren's case. I think they were, because what they do also in the desert is they call Norma if they need advice, if they find somebody. And the prosecutor was trying to discredit her as a witness and discredit her work. And he said to her, well, wouldn't it be better in a perfect world if you were treating someone and it was on a one-to-one basis, meaning maybe what they should do is call Border Patrol or wait for Border Patrol and not calling a doctor to the volunteers to help them. And what she said was, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have migrants in the desert. So she's a wonderful help to us, and she helped us a lot this year. We called her a lot, and we didn't even have medicines for children, and all of a sudden a third of the people we're seeing are children, young children. And so yes, one thing Donald Trump said, which is true, they come with diseases. Oh yeah, they're very sick. The children are sick, not only the flu, but chicken pox, whooping cough. The nurse I worked with got whooping cough. And I don't know. I'm so emotional about this. I didn't think I would be. I was for the first 2 years. I could hardly talk about it without crying. So she got whooping cough and was very sick. Last year, I got the flu and was very sick for 2 weeks and lost a lot of weight. So, and I'm diabetic, so it's hard to gain my weight back. And then this year, and I could attribute it to the asylum seekers because we had a room full of people with the flu, and 2 days later, that's what I got. And this year, I got a different version of it and also lost weight. So the last 2 years, I haven't been going every week like I was before because I went down to 95 pounds. Wow. I'm now 102, so. But there was a time I looked at pictures of the way I looked 10 years ago. I used to be a lot heavier. Anyway, so that is slowing me down, and I do think that the Keno Border Initiative is getting to the point, maybe with their new building, that maybe they'll start hiring nurses because our nurses got, almost every nurse that was going there was sick this year. But it isn't only on the border that we were getting sick. The Tucson community is overwhelmed with these thousands and thousands of people that they have like 3 days to process. And they're no longer bringing just a couple people, they're bringing hundreds of people. So Catholic Services is a very big provider to asylum seekers. But also the other churches are too. One day, shortly before we came, the man who works at Catholic Services got a phone call from Border Patrol. Now these detention centers at this point are just packed. People want to come down and see what's going on. A lot of people they don't let in. I don't think if a congressman goes down there they necessarily even let him in. But some people can get in. Melania Trump was able to get in. And people who are in charge of inspections or people who are in the Homeland Security can get in. So he gets a phone call and they say, can you take 1,000 people in 2 hours?
Oh. Who's he?
He works for Catholic Services. He's a worker at Catholic Services. And he said, yes. And then got on the phone with all the churches that he knew would say yes. And they just filled the churches up with 1,000 people, and then they all processed them. So very quickly, we got churches established with rooms. And, I mean, some of the churches are making actual additions. Mm-hmm. Southside Church, Presbyterian Church, added a shower. You know, did things that is going to help with the situation. But, and then they just continued. They're just continuing taking people because they're bringing so many. And these people are sick. They really are sick, and so, you know, almost everybody I know in Tucson is volunteering at a church somewhere, and or they're taking food or they're taking clothing or they're doing whatever they can, and they're getting sick also. And I don't know if Andrew got whooping cough this year. I don't know how. I didn't have it. But the woman I worked with did, and he got a cough for 5 weeks, and it followed whooping cough, or maybe he picked it up somewhere else. But they're not vaccinated. You get chicken pox, and all of a sudden everybody's got chicken pox. Or mumps. We didn't have mumps at the Commodore, but some of the detention centers, you're seeing, they're under quarantine for mumps. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, hundreds of thousands of people. They're sick. The volunteers are overwhelmed. They have bed bugs and lice. Sometimes they have to close down. More asylum houses have opened up, but they'll have to close them down. One where a girlfriend of mine works, it just opened up this year and wasn't open very long, and they had to close it down because there were bed bugs in all of the cots. They buy these little cots and just stack them right next to each other. And then they come in and they try to get them to feel better. And they give them new clothes and they try to find out where they're going, and they're feeding them. In 3 days, they're moving on. So it isn't like these churches open up and people are staying. It's just that as soon as they're gone, some more are coming. So the detention centers are full, but they're moving people. Some, you know, people are moving because the Border Patrol is overwhelmed. They do not know what to do with all the people coming and seeking asylum. And I don't know what the answer is, but I do think we should stop going in and helping overthrow countries. And for example, I mean, El Salvador is a little country. It could probably fit in Massachusetts. But Venezuela is a big country. Take sanctions off Venezuela. Let people farm their land. Let them live under a socialistic government. Instead of interfering and then saying, oh, all these people here. So, well, I have to see that. Because Mexico, it's unique. It will depend who's driving. They love me. They're nice to me. Because I have a passport. They're interested in bringing people to the and in cities, in and out. And in some areas of Mexico, they own the highway. Nobody goes in. I tell them, I'm just see this little town, which you often hear about, where people come. And the whole town is run by gangs. So the Mexican government has learned not to be messing around with it. I don't think they're going to stop too much. I'll have to see that. Especially, I mean, they have their business. And violence used to be really bad in the Texas area. And that's all pretty much quite down. But they're leaving people alone. They're not stopping them. And so I'll have to see what Army does. I don't think they're going to do much myself. NAFTA wanted Mexicans to the money. Corporations in Mexico. 4 months later, they built a wall. They didn't want them coming into the U.S. and working anymore. They wanted them to work in Mexico. So the wall, of course, was built because a lot of people in the United States wanted them to stop crossing. She also said, I don't need to know you to organize the city as best she could of people who were in risk to fill out a paper. We had workshop after workshop. A school opened up where we would meet. And people would come. They'd sign their name asking for her. We had the papers all set for her signature. She kept a copy, or her group kept a copy. They have a copy. They carry it in their purse. And if they're stopped, they're going to be able to say, I have an attorney, and under this statute, and it's all printed out, So today when Trump's talking about going and deporting people, Tucson is in pretty good shape because people at risk actually have this in their purse. Mm. And I don't think all cities did that. But this legal clinic, all the water they're taking out on the border, we do check cashing. When you leave one of these prisons, detention centers, they take everything away from you and then they give you a check. And when you're deported, you're sitting in Nogales with a check that no one can cash. So another service that No More Deaths provides is cashing all these checks. And so we work on the Mexican side, we work in the desert, we have legal fees, huge legal fees right now because so many people are being arrested. And some of them get their own attorney. Scott Warren got his own attorney. And but we have a lot of expenses with the legal. So No More Deaths, if anyone wants to check, it's to The UU Church of Tucson, they're their fiscal agent, and then you put no more deaths. Okay. Another thing, which is for the first 8 years, mainly what kind of care I gave was helping people who were dehydrated or feet with blisters. That isn't what we saw this year. The people coming from Honduras and El Salvador, some of them have small businesses, but they're being extorted. And they're worried they're going to take their children away. They're coming with their own phones. The people who come along with us that provide phone service, they're hardly used this year. So they were helping translate and help with medical care, because the biggest problem this year was medical care. There's been other times when medical care has been down and we all help with making phone calls. But some of the people coming, you can see they have some resources. They want to get away from the violence. And that's how they're getting asylum. I don't think you have to have more than, I want a good job to get asylum. You can't get it that way, but you have to prove that you're in danger. And when you go to court, that's just the first part. Then you go to court, and it's very difficult to prove. Andrew was working on a case where a woman was from Mexico, and coming back here and then going back the next year, we had an election. So where's his client? Oh, she was already deported. I mean, so she hadn't gotten to the point yet in her process where you could stop a deportation.
We'll have to stop our process right now. And thank you so much, Mary. Now we have a time for an offertory. Thank you, Mary. Our closing words are from The Devil's Highway by Luis Alberto Urrea. Coyote's gone with most of our money and all our hope. Left us just this side of Mexico. Home feel like heaven compared to this. I know the buzzards overhead hold salvation in their kiss. It's this bad, crazy son that makes me think like that. I lost my mind and I lost my soul, and I know that I'm never going home. Stay for coffee, greet one another, have a great day.
Thank you, Rick.